Hey guys, welcome back to the Law of Attraction Secrets podcast. I'm your host, Natasha Graziano. Today we have an amazing guest. I love being here. I love getting to interview some of the top people in the world who are in the top percentages of what they do. And this really is a power couple who I love. I recently had my Botox done with them and they gave me some amazing products, which have been a game changer when I go in the sun. We're going to get into all of that. Dr. Dusan Sajic is somebody who is a leading dermatologist. And he helps people with longevity. So he's a longevity physician on the connection between skin health, aging, inflammation, and overall wellness. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us both.
Thank you so much for coming, Dr. Sajic. I love this. There's so many things I want to ask you. I mean, you know, when it comes to skin, people don't understand the power of real skin and what it really means. Why do you say skin is not vanity, but biology?
Well, I'm finally glad that we're entering this longevity medicine. We're seeing it in regenerative aesthetics or skin. And that's truly what it is. You know, we used to look at the skin as just vanity metrics, and it broke my heart when, you know, women would come to our clinic and want to hide from it and say, I don't want to tell my husband. And that's why it was so important for me to also bring my wife into this mix, because it's all about community. That's number one for longevity, community, being proud of your skin.
Yes.
And then we started digging even deeper and seeing that, hey, wait a minute, it can actually reflect your internal organs. So how you're aging on the inside. We can now actually test with a simple marker, no blood tests needed. Most of the stuff I can get from one little swab of your skin, then lots of blood work.
That's wild. So your actual story began as a patient. Can you take us back to your autoimmune journey? Explain how the experience changed the way that you practice medicine.
It was just a journey in frustration. So I remember it even in, you know, high school, I was trying to become a Division I athlete. I was, you know, on the bubble trying to get things. And there would be random days when I just couldn't wake up. And it was always in the mornings. My back would be hurting. I couldn't really recover. And I would see the doctors and there was no diagnostics at the time. And for most autoimmune conditions like ankylosing spondylitis, which is what I was diagnosed with, it takes on average 10 years to diagnose it. And then even more to it than that, if something becomes readily available, it takes about 17 years for it to become actual medical knowledge, right? So the journey was like, how do we actually speed that process up without compromising patient safety and actually getting into advanced diagnostics? And that was the first journey. It was through MRI that was diagnosed. So it was something called non-radiographic AS.
Right.
And it wasn't until I saw Dr. Inman, who's like, no, I've seen this before. And he was the top rheumatologist in University of Toronto. And what that led me down to was that with that inflammation, it wasn't just my joints, it was also my skin. And because I had so much damage as a child growing up, my parents didn't know, I actually also ended up getting a skin cancer. So then that shook my world. And that's what also led Sonia, who was super successful, she ran 3 pharmacies, was revenue $10 million a year, to say, listen, we got to change the healthcare outcome. Sonia, what do you thought about that?
Yeah, I think it was, for the most part, a life-changing experience, because when you work in healthcare, you don't expect to become the patient. You expect to be the one solving people's problems. And then when you're the person on the other side of that diagnosis, it rocks your world. So we had to go from telling other people bad news to be on the receiving end of that.
Right.
And I think that's what sparked the journey for us. I left my career in pharmacy. I went back to school, did a little more in terms of medicine to try and learn about being more on the diagnostic side, getting in front of that diagnosis, and what can we do about it? And the sad news is there's not a lot that was available in terms of how to prevent it from happening again. And certainly in terms of skincare, there was nothing accountable. It's such a huge industry. There's so much money in the beauty industry, but beauty has to be more than skin deep, right? It has to come from the inside. And, you know, working in dermatology, to get a diagnosis of skin cancer, one, it's embarrassing. It's like, I'm the doctor. What do you mean I have a skin cancer? I'm telling people how to treat their skin so they don't get this kind of stuff. And the problem wasn't the diagnosis. The problem was the products that were available didn't meet the grade. And so we set out to change that, to sort of make a product for him that would work, you know, for something that worked for our family, and then to bring it to the broader audience, to bring it to everybody else, because it was time.
Well, we also wanted to go to the root of the problem. And that's what I found out. Like, you know, once I got into med school and then dermatology, what most people don't realize is that sun damage that happens today, there's no way to fix it, right? Mm-hmm. So it just accumulates. It's like asbestos in a way. You don't get the lung cancer now. You get it in 30 years. Mm-hmm. And it's same with sun damage. And the goal was like, well, why is that the answer? Can we actually research why that's happening? Mm. the first glimpse came from my favorite laser, CO2. So about 10 years ago, we had really good data that we can actually reverse some of that damage. And then the push was, how can we bring that back into skincare? How can we get early diagnostics? Because again, I was blown away. I was blown away because on the surface, I thought I was fixing the damage because I was using retinol, vitamin C, sunscreen, you know, once I got into med school. And on the surface, I looked great. But one of the technological things called the Visia system, it's a camera, multispectral, tons of, like, it can actually see below the surface. Told me that I had all this damage. I thought, oh, this is fake. Maybe the technology is not ready for prime time. And then sure enough, 3 years later, I got my skin cancer. So I'm like, okay, so I can tell what the damage is.
Where did you get it?
So it was on my face and on the scalp.
Whoa.
Yeah. So a little tiny scar on my forehead there and then one in my scalp as well. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's what it is.
I mean, I fully understand because, I mean, I've never revealed this anywhere, but I had a skin cancer two years ago, whenever that was, after I had my daughter, and I was shocked. I was like, wait, what? I was like, this is crazy. What do you mean that I have a skin cancer thing? Yeah. But here's the wild part. I felt it on my back and I felt this like itch, and it was like a little raised kind of shape, like a little island skin color. And I was like, oh, I feel this thing. I'm very in tune with my body. And I went to my surgeon, not my dermatologist, but he does plastic surgery and aesthetics and whatever. And I said, this thing on my back, and while I'm here and you're doing my whatever you're doing on my face, can you just like take out this thing on my back, because have a look at it. And he said, I'll cut it out. It looks completely benign and I don't think it's anything, but I'll take it off. So I did day surgery, just laid me down. 30 minutes later, he'd cut it out. He's a surgeon. So it was like, you know, it was just there and then. Anyway, he sent it off for an autopsy, calls me 3 weeks later. It's like, you're not going to believe this. I mean, we were like friends. So he's like, you were right. I am so glad that we took that thing out, even though we all thought it was nothing. He said, that is a skin cancer cell. And we took out enough, so we think it's fine. They've said that you don't need to take out any more, but it's very close to the border. But we took out enough. We're still 1 millimeter or whatever. But I couldn't believe it. I was like, so I never got the bad news and had to do something about it. I took it out before the bad news. It was a very unusual way of doing it, but it's because I'm so psychic with my body. So I was like, oh my God. But the point is, it has made me change my whole game with the sun. And I love the sun. I only go out early now. And when I am in midday sun, I am covered in your sun cream, because your sun cream actually works. And your sun cream is, what they call it, sun cream here?
Sun protection factor, SPF.
Yeah.
Sunblock.
It's so great. And I love the whole kit that you guys have for the face with the tinted one. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can make it beautiful. Absolutely. And you've made it beautiful.
And that's what we wanted to do. So one of the other things in medicine that really had a big effect on me was my mom. You know, so she had her first heart attack when I was age 13. I was playing basketball. You know, I get a call while I'm on this thing. My dad saying, like, I can't come pick you up. I'm like, what do you mean? And he called the office because there was no cell phones back then, right? Dating myself a little bit. And so the principal comes in, is like, hey, your dad called. They can't pick you up. You got to go to this hospital. I have to take a city bus. And then after she had breast cancer, and what really weighed down on me was really the weight, what I called the weight of the institution. When you go and you see, like, just it feels like a hospital, and you just don't want to be there. And what I saw in my mom specifically was when we went to sort of Princess Margaret Hospital, right, in Toronto. What they focused on was like the actual patient experience. They had these big atriums and palm trees inside. And so when you go in, you don't really feel like you're in the hospital. And I thought the same for skincare. You either have beautiful skincare that's completely fluff, just paints over the surface, doesn't really actually fix anything below. And then you have sort of medical grade skincare, which looks medical. And we thought, why can't it be that, you know, integrated. You enjoy it, integrate it so that you can actually enjoy being healthy and you don't have to feel guilty every time you look at that bottle, like, oh, it's medicine. Oh yeah, it's reminding me of my skin cancer. I want to repair that shield. So you can, like me myself, I grew up on the Adriatic coast. I loved rowing, you know, and I still wanted to be outside. So it's like, how can we build sunscreen that doesn't just protect, it can also repair? And we didn't have anything on the market that had that.
So good. So how often should we be wearing SPF?
So So I put it on every morning. It's part of my routine. You brush your teeth after you wash your face, and I put my SPF on. And our SPF has got that tint that you mentioned that for me, it's like wearing a foundation. I don't have to put anything else on. It's nice and matte. You don't get that pill roll or flashback. So it's nice. But I think if you don't get in that routine, it's hard. Most people think you throw your sun cream in the bag and you go to the beach and that's when you use it.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be, right? You don't brush your teeth just because you're going to kiss somebody. You hope you're going to kiss somebody, but you don't just brush your teeth because you brush your teeth every day because it's part of your hygiene routine, right? That's your health. Your skin is your health. It should be every single day and multiple times if you're outdoors every day. I work in a medical office. I am indoors all day long, but I still get a lot of sun exposure through the windows. And it's just being in the habit of taking care of my whole body. And the skin is my outermost shield. So I have to take care of that first.
Yeah, I totally agree. What can someone's face tell you about their health?
This is an emerging field, and I love it. And we're getting more and more tools. So we have a really cool tool now called the PAOT test, for example, is one test that can tell you actually how well your antioxidants are working. And that's been sort of a passion project of my own, because 90% of skincare, like vitamin C specifically, are completely useless.
You know? Really?
Absolutely.
Wait, the ones that are sold on the market.
You got it. So especially because part of vitamin C is not just that there's vitamin C in there, and that's where certain brands will say, well, we make sure that the vitamin C is in there. I'm like, well, it's not just that. It has to be stable. It has to be the right percentage. It has to actually penetrate through the tissue, not just be on the surface. It has to avoid, your skin is a fortress, literally. It has defenses built in to neutralize that type of stuff, right? So there are products out there like, you know, for example, C. ferulic, the most probably data out there. But here's the other problem that we found out when we're doing with this test is it takes 2 hours for it to actually start become active and to activate your cellular defenses. So that's where we developed our, what I call our hero product, Rejuvenate Serum, to actually boost it within 15 minutes. And we actually have data. We just presented that in MCAS in Brazil and AMWC, the biggest, two biggest conferences for cosmetic stuff just recently. Mm-hmm. And so that's just one test. Now we have actually, especially speaking of the sun, I'm an outdoorsy guy as well. You know, I'm not your typical dermatologist, but after my skin cancer, I was like, you know, I was hiding. We'd go on vacation. You're hiding, especially at peak times. And I think that's still the best way to do it. But what if there's like a volleyball game and every single resort, guess what time they have volleyball?
12.
High noon. Exactly.
No
always.
Way.
Yeah. It's always at noon, 11 a.m. to like 12 p.m. And it's peak sun. And I'm like, well, I don't want to avoid life. I don't want to necessarily be that guy like, guys, can we like play this at 9 a.m. or like maybe 3 p.m. when the sun's lower? It's not going to happen. I've tried it a few times and then just people look at you weird, right? So it's like, how do we build in that resiliency? And then how do we measure it after? Like, so everybody's going to be different. There's a tool now, there's a mitochondrial DNA damage test. It's a simple swab. You just mark it down, you send it away, and it can actually tell you that. So there's so much diagnostics, like I said. And then there's also the...
What can it tell you?
It's called Skin Life Analytics. So it can tell you about the mitochondrial damage. So that's the number one thing that we think leads to actual skin cancer and pre-cancer, if we had to pick one thing. So the DNA damage that's under there, right? So we can actually track it and reverse it and build your own personal profile where we can sort of say, hey, maybe the skincare is not enough. We got to start giving you supplements that can help fix your mitochondria. Things like niacinamide, for example, being one of them. But also there's things like MitoPure, MitoQ, or even my favorite now, it's called NovoSlabs, developed by MIT and Harvard, that's actually been shown to reverse chronological age. Because guess what the number, outside of sun exposure, guess what the number one risk factor for skin cancer is?
I don't know.
Aging. So we get that when people are older. And then number two is immune dysregulation. So people that are on organ transplants that have their immune system reduced. So it's age and immune. So if we track those two things and we can actually optimize, we can actually help repair. And that's another publication we just submitted for publication and presented at in the...
Congrats. Yeah. That's amazing. You guys, well, I know you're really paving the way. It's so wonderful to see like the work that's being done here, because you are going to help people to be educated about it and you give them an actual product. So it's not like, here's the education, go find it yourself. It's like, here's the education. And by the way, here's the product, you know, and I love that. I use a vitamin C on my face that's like handmade out of somebody, you know, she's in health, in this sort of arena, and it's different when you it's like five steps, but it's not sold in stores. Mm-hmm. And it's like a handmade thing that's, you know, been approved for her. It's not like sold. And it's, you know, higher level stuff, which you guys would understand. But anyway, one of the things is the exfoliant that comes with it, part two, and you put it on your face and it's pure vitamin C. Mm-hmm. You can only have it on for 15 seconds and you just blend it in. So mm-hmm. hoping that's, I mean, that's been great for my skin. I don't know how it's, but it seems to be doing well. Mm-hmm. So
I think part of that, though, when you mention all these steps, is that the average person doesn't have time to do all these things, even though we want to. You know, I have 10 minutes. I have to get everything. I have 3 kids,
right?
2 businesses, 2 dogs. It's right. A crazy life. I want to be able to grab something and go. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it gets complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've ever walked into a big department store, you've gone to Sephora, you've gone to Nordstrom's, and you look around and there's a million things and all the packaging looks amazing. And there's lots of people running around telling you to buy this and that. Like, how do you know? Right? How do you know what you can rely on? What's accountable? Like, that's another thing that I think is missing in this industry is accountability in skincare. And you know, when you're going to put your name on something like he did, I think you have to recognize that that's such a risk to go and say like, yes, stamp your name on it and be like, I believe that this works. But that's the only reason why. Remember, you make something for yourself, you want to share with others, you're going to make sure it works. So that was like 10 years to make something that actually works. Right? Yeah. So I feel like more people need to know and be more cautious, you know, ask questions. Who's doing this stuff? Who's doing your face? Who's doing your skincare? You know, what are you spending all your hard-earned money on? Because it doesn't have to be expensive, but it better work if you're going to spend your time and money to do it. That's my opinion anyway.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Find something that does work. And then it's really not that big of an investment if you think about it. If you divide it up into 30 days and you still haven't finished the product. Mm-hmm. So now it's like that really costs you $2 a day, mm-hmm. whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, or you just work it out. That's what I do. I'm like, oh, I buy this every 3 months. That's a really great investment. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's something that lasts you. Can your skin reveal disease before symptoms come up elsewhere?
Well, that's exactly where validation comes from. So you're looking into the skin. We're very fortunate. I mean, many times I can look into the skin and say, you know, this is what you have. If you have excessive bruising, I can say something's wrong with your liver or your blood. Mm-hmm. But that's on sort of gross examination where you just see it with your eyes. But there's so many things. And going back to what you said about skin cancer, we hear that all the time. And there's something called a dermatoscope, for example, where we can look into and we can see patterns that your eye cannot see. There's 50 different things, from blotches, regressions, streaks, pseudopods, you know, all these things that we can see, abnormal vessels, all these things we can see on the dermoscopy, where, you know, if your surgeon was trained on the dermoscopy, he might have said like, hey, I see these patterns, and you would have known sooner. And so we're getting into that era, like I said, with mitochondrial DNA damage. You know, if that's, again, for me, you know, we were working on it and said, we saw my mitochondrial damage was so high because of those many, many, many years that I spent out in the sun before I became a dermatologist. You know, my parents didn't know. Nobody knew in the 70s and 80s. They're just like, go out there, just get the most sun you can. I had so many blistering sunburns. They thought it was like calluses, you know. It was like a pride thing. Like, you got this blistering sunburn, you're going to have the most vitamin D ever, you know?
Oh, yeah. Or I get this a lot. I literally have girlfriends that lay by my pool with baby oil, or they're like, after it's red, it's gonna go tan. I'm so happy. And I'm like, you're literally giving yourself skin cancer. They're like, no, I've never had it. I'm never gonna get it. And I'm like, I've been there. So I was that girl. And I try, you know, I feel bad to try and explain to them. They have no idea. They're like, the red is, it may look burnt right now, but it goes tan. I'm like, it is not. It like is not good for you.
Exactly. But imagine being able to have a simple swab. There's no biopsy. There's no breaking the skin. Yeah. And you send it away, or you do that PAOT test where it tells you, like, look, your inflammation, your vitamin C level, your all of that stuff is low, 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 low. We got to fix it now. Because I think that's the issue. You said it right. Unless people see it either visually, yes, or through a diagnosis and a test, you're not going to change. You didn't probably change until you get that biopsy back and said, oh my gosh, you got all this damage. And even now, you're probably still just guessing, like, how much damage is in there. You know, I wish I brought it. Like, next time we're in LA, we'll bring the kit and kind of we can swab it and see what's
so
going on, you know? Yeah.
I mean, for me, I'm like, okay, now it's like I protect different, you know? I'm like, certain hours of the sun, I know to like wear sun cream, and I understand my body. And I always thought, oh, because I'm like of a mixed origin, mm-hmm, that I wouldn't get it. And I thought, you know, I mean, am I wrong? I thought that certain skin types get it. But mm-hmm. Okay, so with skin cancer, who is most likely to get it?
Yeah, so we have this classification of skin called the Fitzpatrick classification, all the way from 1 to 6. And it's really, I mean, it roughly equates to sort of skin tone. So the more pale you are, the more risk you are. So your fits one. And then darker skin tones with more richly melanated skin are going to be type six. But it translates how actually you respond to the sun. So fits one is never tans, always burns. You know, fits types two is like rarely tans, almost always burns. You know, type three is like, well, you know, can get an initial burn, but then mostly tans. And then it kind of goes through fits type six where it's like, you never burn, right? So we used to think it was just the sun, and the sun is still the most important factor by far. But we're now finding out that like exposures, you know, what kind of diet you're eating, you know, microplastics, it's a big thing now, more and more, like things we're eating that's in our environment. Is it, you know, processed foods? Could that all be adding? We're starting to get more and more information that that could be a big contributing factor as well. So it's not just, you know, the racial or the way the skin, the pigmentation levels. Mm-hmm. It's also all these other things that are happening internally that could be adding to that.
Oh my gosh. Why are so many people still questioning sunscreen?
There's so much information online. So, I mean, I'm sure you're like me and we scroll through TikTok and Instagram and we're being entertained, right?
Yeah.
I think we forget that it's entertainment. Mm-hmm. And we don't necessarily stop to question who's providing the information. And there's a lot of hype and there's a lot of fear-mongering. So, I mean, you could probably find just as many, you know, Instagram reels about how the sun is damaging as you could about how sunscreen can kill you or cause cancer. So, you know, it's just all this information that's out there that's not being regulated either. So I think that's part of it. And I think, too, science is always evolving. We are learning new things all the time, which is why testing and diagnostics is so important and validation is important because we have to know what we're reading and what we're doing. It makes sense, but it's not finite. It's going to change over time, right? So, you know, are there products out there that are going to damage you more than help you? For sure, right? And some of them were sunscreens. There was a huge thing in Australia, actually, very recently, that the claims that were being made about how much SPF was actually in the product were completely false. So it would say SPF 30 or 50. It had an SPF of 4. Australia has one of the highest skin cancer counts in the world. So it's madness to me. Then that's, again, about accountability. So I think there's that. And somebody knows somebody else who knows somebody else who's had a reaction to something. And now all of a sudden, that's what we believe, right?
So is sunscreen good for us or bad?
Sunscreen's great for you. So what part of it is estimating risk. And we as humans are not good at estimating risk, right? And especially if you hear firsthand. So if I told you something, you know, be careful, white trucks, if you see a white truck, run, you know, black cat, if a black cat goes under like a mirror and it breaks, you're going to be like, so we as humans are social creatures, we're emotional creatures, so we're much more susceptible to take, you know, emotional sounding things than we are hard science. And that's the hard, how do you bridge that, right? So there is, and it always stems with, there is some element of truth. So, you know, I think what it stems from in sunscreens was that, you know, recently in the US, I think about 3 years ago, they showed that putting certain types of sunscreen ingredients on can actually get into your bloodstream higher than we thought. And there is some potential that it might alter certain types of hormones in your body, right? But if we look at it in the greater context, right, there's so many household products that are actually causing more of that hormonal disruption, like fragrances, certain fragrances, essential oils,
perfumes,
bleach, cooking oils.
Yes.
All of that stuff is way more likely to cause it. And then we also look at risk benefits. So like, again, for me, it's like sort of skipping over $100 bills and picking up pennies is what I always like to say when you're avoiding sunscreen. So for me, yes, there's risk. I mean, there's risk of drinking water. You can choke, you can die. Does that mean you never drink water because it risks? Again, I love one of your podcasts, you know, where the guy talked about take risks.
Yeah, you wore a whole t-shirt.
You wore a whole t-shirt.
Take more risks. Like,
that's it, exactly, right? So it's, we want to do a calculated risk and ideally find a professional. Look, I get it. I think the second component is there are physicians out there that don't know everything and that, you know, patients have been burned before, like myself included. It took 10 years. Now, part of that is the science wasn't there. Part of that, maybe they weren't as thorough enough. Maybe they weren't cutting edge. So I always encourage patients, ask questions. If your doctor isn't willing to entertain it and just dismisses you, you're in the wrong place. Find somebody you trust and you can really discuss that with and say, look, let's map out your risk profile. And for me as a physician, for her as a physician assistant associate, like, we don't want you to do worse. We want you to do better. So it's like, how do we sort of map that out for you? And part of the problem, I think, is the time. That's always time. When you go to a regular doctor, when it's, you know, insurance-based, they've got 5 minutes. They're not going to be able to cram everything in 5 minutes. Whereas if it's more concierge-type medicine, you can have more time. And that's part of the reason we also developed our longevity platform, where we can look at the patient holistically. And if somebody's like, listen, I don't want sunscreens, it's the question is why. If they don't like the chemicals, then we can say, stick with the mineral. You know, let's test it. Let's test your blood and prove to you that it's not affecting your internal hormones. Mm-hmm. And then once you validate it, then you're going to be much more, saying like, okay, yeah, sunscreen's fine. This particular brand of sunscreen doesn't do that, and I can protect myself.
How often should somebody get checked for skin cancer or just checking their body?
Yes. So, I mean, the good news is there's more and more AI tools. We have something called a PhotoFinder scan system. So it initially depends on your risk profile, right? So usually I say, if you've had a skin cancer, I'm like, let's do another baseline. Let's check again, maybe in 3 to 4 months. Mm-hmm. And generally for most people, it's yearly unless you're noticing. So guess what the number one thing for longevity is in the world? If you had to put one thing, you know, exercise, sleep, diet, supplements, what would number one be? What do you think? I hate to put you on the spot. Just if you had to pick one thing to stay alive, best quality of life.
Water.
Okay, I like water, yes, because without that, you would die. Then number two would be social. So if you look at the 5 blue zones across the world, from Costa Rica, Loma Linda right here in California.
Here?
Yeah. So it's a blue zone. But if you look at it compared to like San Bernardino, which is right beside it, you have everything else is the same. They have access to the same food, the same nutrition, the same exercise, the same weather, the same food, everything, same type of jobs. It's the social. Because they're Mormon and they have that social accountability. So that's the other thing for checking. Have a partner. If you live with somebody, you're actually much more likely. They just did in Germany, they did this study where it was a 10-year study to see if, you know, screening by a doctor made a difference. It actually made no difference. You know why? People who checked themselves, who took their own accountability, and if they had a wife and spouse and said, hey, do you mind checking my back? Actually checked it sooner. So if you see something, even if it's brand new, like you said, it looked like nothing. And many doctors will say, well, maybe it's nothing. The good news is you do generally have 3 months. Even with melanoma, which is the worst type, we now have evidence that, you know, delaying it by 3 months made no difference. So the biggest thing is track it. If you notice it changing, even if your doctor today said, look, it looks fine, changes tomorrow or in a week,
go back
and say, hey, it changed, right? Be your own advocate.
So you should go if you see something, you should go to a dermatologist or you should go to a doctor first?
I mean, you know, ideally a dermatologist, right? Because they're trained specifically and they're going to have those tools. Like I said, like when your plastic surgeon saw it and said, look, it looks benign. We have tools that can tell you 50 other parameters. So the key is ask your doctor if they're trained in dermoscopy or if they have like AI imaging, like PhotoFinder or dermographics that can detect that. That's ideal. But get somebody that can tell you. And if your doctor's not sure and they're like, I don't know, come back in a month or two. If it does change, you know, ideally to a dermatologist.
Wow. Okay. I want to ask you about GLP-1s. What are people getting wrong about GLP-1 medications like Ozempic?
Yeah. So big question. And I get this comment a lot. It's one of our highest performing Instagram photos is what I say is like, I love GLP-1s because they help with longevity. But what I say, it ages you fast.
And then people
are like, what do you mean by that? I'm like, your facial age. Because what ends up happening is they actually, and compared to other fat loss, like for example, if you had a gastric band or you had surgery or you're just, you know, starving yourself, the superficial fat component of your face really rapidly deteriorates much faster. So you're going to get that gaunt look. Your skin quality is actually going to decrease unless we intervene with like biostimulators like Radies, Sculptra, or even things like cold therapy, you know, fat grafting to really restore that superficial fat. So that's the number one. And then number two is starting with the exact dose and study. So I do studies for, and we actually just published a paper on how GLP-1s influence sort of facial aging and cosmetic aging. And did you know that 20%, one out of every 5 people drop out of the studies because of side effects?
That's crazy.
So you got to go low, you got to go slow, you got to find the right one. So full disclosure, I'm on a GLP-1 myself.
You don't even look like you need to lose weight.
Well, that's the thing is like, it's adjusting and looking for your biology, seeing where it's at. Even if you look great on the outside, checking your markers on the inside, seeing, are you insulin sensitive? Are you doing this? I'm also on hormone replacement therapy. So, you know, some of my risk factors may go up. And so actually GLP-1s are great if you're doing it with hormone replacement therapy, because a lot of that risk, like cancers, you know, diabetes, glucose risk, triglycerides and lipids actually go down with GLP-1s. And that's the other thing nobody really talks about is GLP-1s. It's not just about looking better. It actually decreased. We just found out it decreases all-cause cancer by over 50%.
That's amazing.
It's amazing.
So are peptides the future or are they overhyped?
Right now, I would say if you know have that truth or trolling or hope or hype, I'm going to say the vast majority of peptides, I mean, it depends on which stack of peptides. So I think peptides like GLP-1s, you know, they're like, they're the truth. I think they're, you know, 10 out of 10 in terms of truth. Peptides like, you know, there's one that really freaks me out, like melanotan. I give them negative 300. So people are taking it because it gives them a tan. We're actually seeing aggressive melanomas, and now that's published because that it just stimulates melanocytes.
Okay, good that I didn't do that because that was on my list to next take.
Yeah.
So, like what I saw you guys, again, like Botox and all the things and this, it's amazing.
So people like peptides because they are, you know, short chain amino acids. They're signaling molecules, so they signal. So people like that, that it's sort of natural and something your body makes itself anyway. Uh-huh. But what they don't realize is it's only going to be as good as the base foundation. So if you already got a mutation that's going to cause cancer, you're just going to amplify that. So you're going to amplify the baseline. And that's why I think that's why we created our longevity platform, sitelongevity.com, pretty easy, where we sort of we say, let's test the baseline. Let's see where you're at first for molecular diagnosis. There's something called CancerGuard actually now, or Gemini test. It's a simple little blood test. You know, they can send a nurse to your home. You don't even have to go to a lab. It's part of the test fee, right? So it's not even something like necessarily with us. Like you can just get it. You can go online and get it. And it can actually tell you, hey, you're at a risk for this. You're at risk for that cancer, right?
And what do you do if you get told you're at risk?
Well, then you got to be careful and you got to do more screening. A lot of people, even though we have like breast cancer screening, you know, colon cancer, prostate cancer screening, those are the big ones. People don't do it. You know, then you know, okay, maybe I need to do a whole body MRI and actually see, is there something going on if this test is elevated, right? So it's in medicine, it's, you know, one option is to do a shotgun approach and just test for everything. And that sometimes you see like doctors will miss this test on you. I'm like, I know, but it's a risk profile. There's like 3,000 tests. Are you going to test for 3,000 things? Or are we going to sit there and say, Natasha, what is your risk profile? Okay, you've had skin cancer. Let's look at family history. Which of your family members had which type of cancer? So then it's like, okay, you're at more risk of this. So we should probably start with this. And then we can go into these other tests if we need to, right? So that's, I think, the other thing people get wrong when, in terms of medicine is like, well, my doctor never told me about this. I'm like, well, are you even at a risk for that?
Right. That's interesting. What are the biggest signs of inflammation that people ignore?
What do you think, Sonia?
So myself, got diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis later in life than I think I should have. I didn't know that when I was feeling, my skin felt almost like it was too tight all the time. Worse in the morning. My joints would be really sore in the morning. I work out a lot. So I thought, oh, that's just, I'm so great. I'm working out so hard. But actually, those were all signs of inflammation that I didn't realize. You think inflammation, you think red, hot. Like that's what comes to mind for me. But it's more subtle. I didn't sleep well. I couldn't lose weight. I was getting bigger around the middle and I was working out. Like I worked 7 days a week hard with a trainer. I was watching what I was
doing. Show them the pipes.
I mean, when you told me your age, I was gobsmacked.
I'm almost 50. Almost 50.
That's phenomenal.
But you don't. And also we tend to ignore things because we're busy and we don't want to acknowledge it. I mean, there's a base of fear in finding out anything could be wrong too. So, I mean, sometimes you're willing to ignore it because you think, no.
How did you improve it when you realized what you did have?
So it wasn't one thing. There's no magic bullet, is I think. And it's no magic bullet for one person that works for everyone else. It's very, very specific. I think you have to have it almost curated to you. For me, it was a combination of acknowledgement first, you know, getting through the fact that I had this condition. It wasn't going to go away. There's no cure. That, you know, puts me at risk for other things. It was mental first. It's about dealing with the mental health piece of it, you know, consulting my family, seeking, you know, support in my community, and then getting the sleep I needed, saying no to things, because I'm type A. I'm a yes, yes, yes. I'm a pleaser. I want to get it done. But to feel better, it has to start with you. To be able to make others better, it has to start with you. So for me, it was sleep. It was making sure I was eating the right things and not trying to just pursue the right body and looking a certain way, which is, I think, important for women, more so even now for men than it ever used to be. So that it started small. Doing more testing. And then I got on a GLP-1 too. I was able to lose a lot of weight. I lost over 100
pounds. I can't even imagine you bigger. So this is like a shell shock because I can only imagine you as a supermodel like you are.
Oh, you're amazing. Well, thank you. No, it was, and again, really small. So it was little by little. And first giving myself the grace to have a problem. Nobody wants to be flawed, right? Nobody wants to hear that they have to do something or what they're doing isn't enough. So it was like acknowledging that going on a medication is okay. And that was when there was stigma around GLP-1s. Oh, you're taking something to help you lose weight? Like, don't you just work out? Yeah, I worked out 7 days a week with a trainer, like crazy, wasn't eating, wasn't losing weight. And it was because there was something wrong on the inside of me.
Right?
If that had been diagnosed earlier, it'd have been like the best version of myself so many years ago. Like,
so you did a combination of peptides, diet, sleep.
Everything. Yeah. Everything. There's no one thing.
When I healed myself, I mean, I didn't use peptides back then when I was healing myself 8 years ago. You know, it was grounding, it was meditation, it was breath work, it was mindset, it was, and then diet really began and moving my body and doing things I hadn't really done. But now when I'm going through, you know, I've been through different things, it's like I will use all the newer technologies. But now I do preventional healthcare. So I go to my healing center where I do biohacking at a real deep level every 3 weeks.
Amazing.
And that's just something that I've done since I had the baby because I'm still technically in postpartum. Mm-hmm. And so I go and do that. And that's just a priority in my life. I would rather spend thousands of dollars on that every month versus spending it on shopping or whatever else. My priority is my health.
Absolutely.
So that's why I love having people like you guys on the show who are experts in this and you can really talk about the skin and the health and your body and biohacking and, you know, so many things. What does your daily longevity routine look like?
That's amazing. I mean, generally you have to start, I love it. This will be controversial. You have to start with the sun. So one of the things, you know, you want to open up those shades right away, get that exposure in the sun, you know, early thing in the morning, you want to reset that circadian rhythm and really kind of open that up. There's really very little UV index in the morning. And so those first like 30 minutes to an hour. So actually we do, there's really good solid studies now that show that you need that moderated sun exposure. So very rarely in medicine is like complete avoidance going to be the answer. You have to be careful. Like if UV index is above 5, yeah, put some sunscreen on. If it's above 10, I probably don't even go outdoors. But so that's the first thing in the morning. And then I kind of flip personally between like some days I'll do the fasting. Sometimes I won't. I find fasting for me as a reset. So I love to track. So I wear the Oura Ring. I mean, I have no sponsorships from Oura Ring. I wish I did, but I don't. But no, it's some kind of tracking, you know, that I used to wear the Whoop as well. But it tells me what my biorhythm is, you know, and if there's some inflammation, there's really good data that fasting is going to be good, right, for you. So that would be the other thing. And the movement, you know, even like 5 minutes, you know, calisthenics, as I'm a couple of years outside of 50, movement is really, really important, right? So that's the first thing. Being thankful every morning, you know, we try and gratitude. And I love that you mentioned that meditation, you know, vibration, like that vibration, the being at sort of one with the universe, being grateful and just being happy for what I tell my kids, be happy for what you have, not for what you don't have. Let's not, you know, not perseverate on sort of the things we don't have because stress is a killer. It really is that chronic stress where you're like, oh, I wish I had that. I wish that was going to be a bad day. So I love doing what Dr. Andrew Huberman described, like a quick breath, a big breath. Do you know about this one?
Let's go.
So big, we'll do it all together. So big breath as much as you can do.
Okay.
And then when you think you can't breathe in anymore, do another quick breath. So like this, I'll demonstrate. Slow release.
Okay.
Ooh, you're a natural. That's great.
How do you feel?
Centered. Yes.
And that's
just one in the morning?
So just as many times as you need. So like people always say, why are you sighing? Or is there something wrong? I'm like, no, it's my mini reset.
Oh yeah,
so
I love that.
Just people are like, why are you sighing? I'm like, well, first, like it's part of my name, like sigh, itch. Yeah, because I'm also itchy. So I'm like, I have to do it to respect my name. And then two, because the studies in Dr. Huberman's lab show that that's one of the best things that can immediately decrease your blood pressure and decrease your cortisol.
Wow.
So outside of even taking medication, just doing this sort of a mini meditation just resets you, grounds you.
I love it. Guys, I've learned so much from you today. Before we wrap, I just would love to do a rapid fire because it's super fun and it's really great for the audience to know what's better and what's worse. Botox or biohacking?
Biohacking.
Both. Most underrated longevity habit?
I think breathing, breath work, honestly.
Most overrated health trend?
Oh, unregulated peptides.
Unregulated peptides. Don't get the gray market stuff.
Coffee or green tea?
Oh, both.
Both.
Peptides or supplements?
Both.
I would say start with the supplements. We have some really good ones like Novo Slabs, you know, whole fish actually. Like we used to say DPA, EHA. Actually, there's an amazing one, not very expensive at all. That's whole fish raises your omega index by HBC Hofseth BioCare.
Wow. Okay. Biggest aging myth.
Ooh. That
it's not reversible.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah.
Fill in the blank. The future of medicine is
personalized.
Wow. Powerful. What's one thing every person listening can start doing today to increase both their health span and their confidence over the next decade?
I think let go of preconceived notions, you know, like Sonia mentioned during the talk, you know, we have so much guilt of doing it. It breaks my heart when, you know, I see women coming in and saying like, okay, I'm not going to tell my husband about this. And that's why I really love doing more sort of true longevity aesthetics where I'm like, why are you afraid to tell your husband or, you know, significant other that you're doing this? Let's focus on the health. And that's why I love doing, like, for example, CO2 lasers. They actually have been shown numerous times. This is another thing we've also published on the face and on the arms now. 90% reduction of skin cancer in the treated areas over 3 years.
With
CO2 laser.
Oh, Fraxel. I had that on my face.
Perfect.
Yes.
But it has to be the right settings. Fraxel. Has to be the right settings because Fraxel is about 50% reduction over a year and a half. CO2 is 90, but we have to go. So see, this is where the depth validation, all that matters. You have to go to, it's 600 microns. So again, it's about that tracking, knowing where you're going, knowing those endpoints. Because anybody can talk about it. Anybody can talk about flying. Like I'm an excellent hobby pilot on a video game.
Yeah.
Don't ever get into a plane with me. You know what I mean? Unless it's a death, life and death emergency and even death, you know, it's not going to be great. But anybody can be a pretender. You know, the expertise is, you know, nuance, subtlety, personalized.
Love it. Guys, thank you for coming today. It's been absolutely amazing. Dr. Sajik and Sonia, thank you for your time. It was so beautiful. I've learned so much. I want to watch this back myself. I'm like, I want to be in it as an audience member. I hope you guys have enjoyed today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Send this to a friend, somebody who you think would benefit from longevity, biohacking, and skincare. Thank you for coming today. You guys, Dr. Sajik's handles are all below. The website, the link, everything that you need. So if you want to go and book a personalized session, you want to go into one of the clinics in America or Canada, they are there below, wherever it is. If there's anything you want to share with the audience, please let them know.
Thank you. We're happy to be here. We love your vibe. And I think starting with this, talking about and being open is so important. So thank you for giving us a chance to do that.
Amazing. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you again more for next time. Bye for now.